nation was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, welcome back to Sacks and Jacks. Hey, we're back on, Maddie, after computer problems yesterday. Almost called Kevin, but he couldn't help. He's not from India. He doesn't work for AT&T, you know. Just one of those things. Before I go launching into a diatribe about... we'll let Kevin talk first. S&P futures up 11, NASDAQ futures up 43. Dow futures up 69. Kevin, how are you?
I'm doing okay. So what did happen yesterday?
It was
strange on the on the listening end.
Well, since you got nothing, yeah, I'd say.
No, I actually occasionally we were picking up some kind of podcast, some kind of gaming podcast that for probably 10 minutes or so was kept coming back on and then going away and coming back on.
Did I win?
It was very strange.
Well, we came in and the entire place is down, right? So phones, nothing, and which is beautiful, right? So of course we just got this latest and greatest system from AT&T. So I don't know how to fix anything, right? So my brother comes in and Dan is our man on just about everything. So he starts calling these idiots, and of course he can't even understand them because they're all in India. Right, and the connection to India is not so hot on his cell phone. Right, so he can't even find anyone. So finally, he gets somebody, and they go, "Well, I'm pinging your router fine, so must be somewhere that you guys bleeped up." And we're like, "How does something go off at 10:30 at night with nobody even here? How could it be like our fault?" Of course, the only thing that works is the line to Stacks and Jacks, but with the one line that we use to go out, but without the phones and everything else, we just can't do the show. But the now that's the line that at least, I won't say weekly, they're down to maybe twice a month. It used to be like every other day. People would call me from AT&T dying to change that line. It's an old copper line, DSL line, that is idiot-proof, right? It's a hard wire all the way from the basement. And they keep wanting me to change it, and I keep saying I'm not changing it. Because no matter whatever else goes out, so at PTI, we have the capability of, use the term, hacking into that line and powering up people's computers so we can do trades and stuff for people, which is what we do for a living. And so, I mean, we can actually, you know, work the place and forward stuff to our cell phones. And they send some guy out, and he wanders out. He spends like an hour at the modem, the big closet, and decides, well, hey, you know, nothing is getting to the router. So I don't know if the guy lied to us from AT&T or what. So he heads downstairs, and sure enough, their installation, somehow or another, the thing they put downstairs is no good. They just did this like 4 months ago. And, we send each other so much stuff, Kevin, that I remember the content, but I blur by the, what was the term somebody was using about where our society is going? Is it flattening or flatlining or something? The incompetence is just everywhere. And yet, these guys are relentless. You can't go anywhere now other than AT&T, pretty much. I mean, we used to, just as a little bit of history, and I'll try and be brief, which I never seem to be able to be. Maddie, what's the name of the stuff that we used to use? We got the Telos box. What kind of line did that thing use? It wasn't a DSL. Was it a DSL?
UFT1?
No. It was a digital access line. right? Maybe what was the name of it? Was it a DSL?
I don't know. You're talking about the line.
DSL is one version. Did you have ISDN?
It was an ISDN line.
Well, it's an ISDN line, yes.
Well, it goes into
a TELUS box.
A TELUS box. So the TELUS box turned it from analog to digital, and would go over that particular line, and that's how we used to access the score and every other place.
And that's how every major radio station still will do remote interviews or hosting, because it's the most reliable line, at least when I was still working in radio.
I'll bet they do not anymore, and I'll say why, is because the AT&T, you know, now they're gifted this monopoly, right? I mean, they're the only people with access to the alleys and the streets and stuff downtown, so they're gifted this thing. They decided they don't want to do copper anymore. So instead of just selling it to somebody else, which would make some sense, because Lou tells us in Denver they sold it all over to Hughes. So Hughes does the downtown, you know, the copper, the old wiring down in Denver. Now, there's maintenance to the stuff, but it always works, right? So they don't want to do that anymore. So in Illinois, only the idiots in Illinois, and again, I'm not calling any individual person an idiot, but I use the... Is there a term, Kevin, for... Can a lot of real smart people get in a room, and is there a term for, like, collective idiocy? Where every individual walks out of a decision and says it's a bad decision, but they all made it?
It's groupthink.
And so we've got this line, and all of a sudden the price starts going up. I mean, to the point where we're paying these guys $6.25 a month to... This is what, 5 years ago, maybe? To go down and hook up in the alley or the street out in front. And the entire cost to go to Phoenix and we went to some other place on Sprint for the actual, you know, the show going out on the lines was like $200 a month. So these guys were charging me three times as much to hook up from the office to the sidewalk. And I say, what are you guys doing? Well, we don't want to do that anymore. Well, sell it to somebody. Well, we're just trying to raise the price until you decide to do something else. Now, how the hell... How do you get to... And then he says to me, well, you're not going to be able to get anybody else any cheaper because we managed to get this through the ICC? Who does the rate stuff? Sure enough, I go online, go to the, you know, the whatever stupid group it is in Illinois, and there it is, ISDN hookup charge, $6.25 a month. So no, even if somebody wanted to come in and help you out and do it, so they actually got a couple companies then got into business that were now talking about this is America, where you would pay for a line to go to them in the downtown area, and they would put you on their line. So they would, like, piggyback on lines. Because you can never get away from the $6.25 a month because they managed to get it through, like, the legislature or something. You couldn't write fiction like this, Kevin.
And the catch to this is that if they're charging you $6.50, I can't remember if we used to pay $25 a month or what for ISDN. We, when I was in Wisconsin... We at the time, you know, T1 was actually pretty good service. So this goes back to the 90s before. Well,
this thing has nothing to do with data. This has nothing to do with data. This is
occasionally your T1 would go down. So we had the branches, all the branches were outfitted with an ISDN line as well, and the routers would recognize that the T1 was down and automatically dial back up via ISDN. Or ISBN, that's the book title, the book number, ISDN, and reconnect. And you could do that because it was so cheap.
Well, I don't know what these guys...
It was a viable backup because it was so inexpensive. And now they want $6.50 a month for that? That's preposterous.
Well, because this one...
In terms of... Let me put it this way. In a regulated world, regulated monopoly, they can get away with it. In a competitive world, price for performance... There's no justification for that kind of price.
No, and well, plus it was already in. What did we start, Matty? $100 a month, or something?
Yeah,
because it's a dual line. I mean, it's when you hear the quality, Kevin, it's not a regular line. It's two lines that come in. You have two SPID numbers, and so when you kick the TELUS box on, we used to you know kick into the score, and you'd swear you were sitting in their office or in their studio. I mean, it was that clear. That's what every radio used everywhere. I'll answer your question. You guys might. What did it used to cost for like the Cubs to do a TV, the Cubs WGN to do a Cub game countrywide before the satellite, where they would use telephone lines? I mean, how much data would we have to go on an old copper line to get a baseball game across it?
Well, and they had to have a you know, proprietary arrangements for the lines too, which was kind of crazy. And what I mean by that is, you actually had to own the line. You had to have an exclusive control over the traffic on those lines. Now you just go out to the internet. You have a you use encryption to create a secure tunnel, and you just do it that way, and you have plenty of bandwidth on the internet.
Well, don't they do most of it on the, like if it's a TV show, don't they use a satellite? I bet they do.
Yeah, I don't know what they do for broadcasting. They probably want to get to fiber as soon as they can, because it's the hardest to disrupt, and the highest quality and the highest capacity.
Well, I know from the, you know, we might do this one of these days. If we put the show on satellite, everybody can pick it up. I mean, anybody with a receiver. So that's what happens if you, when you get like a Rush Limbaugh show or something. You just put it up on the bird, and it costs, what do you think, Matty? A couple $100 an hour to get a spot on the bird in any station in the U.S. I don't know how far it goes, you know, Mexico, Canada, or how far out it goes. But any station in the U.S. can just take it down if they want. That's the beauty of national radio. I mean, but once you're up, you're up, and anybody can grab you. So it's not phone lines going from place to place. But anyway, it's just amazing when you look at these monopolies and how they go, and they've decided to change stuff, and they're just gonna. And I bet I get a call this week. Hey, what about changing that copper line? No, I mean, one of these days I'm sure they're just gonna turn it off. Matter of fact, they've said at the end of the year they might. You know, but why do they get to do that? When they've been given that monopoly, you know, you would think they'd say, okay, if you guys don't want to do it, sell it. I mean, there's a way to do this. I think that's. But,
yeah, there's a way to exit businesses that doesn't leave people who want to stay on the legacy technology, leave them in the lurch. But, you know, I do sort of get that at some point, when you have so little of something, that, you know, for them it's not a cash cow anymore, it's not making them any money, and the cost to support it and finding the talent to support it, people who really understand how it works, gets harder and harder every year. So I get the, you know, why you'd want to price it out. I just think it's a little bit different in when you're in a monopoly, because there is no chance that any kind of competition would go in and say, well, I can continue to do this. You don't get that choice.
Well, I understand that, you know, we don't want people using, you know, telegraph still. I mean, I get that part, but the idea that you just keep raising the prices and squeeze it out of people. I mean, they go from $100 to $600 is a way to get me off, to get a new machine. There's got to be a better solution than that. The interesting part is
you would think so, and I don't know what the right solution is. But if you're a monopoly and you're a regulated company and regulated business, then maybe the solution is, that you can be given some time to transition, and that they provide, I don't know what kind of assistance, but if they want to exit, then it becomes the burden of the monopolist to make the transition smooth for you.
Well, when we started,
clearly they have not done that.
Well, when we moved into this building, PTI, we were PTI long before we moved in here, but there were probably three or four people that we could have gone to, and we went to some group, and I don't think we had a problem for 10 years, and all of a sudden the place gets bought by somebody. I don't think they even knew we existed. I mean, you would call up and say, "Who are you guys again?" So finally, you know, it got to the point where we knew that wasn't a long term situation. And but then somehow or another, the competitors fall off. I mean, Comcast spent 3 months, you know, burrowing into the building. But they were going to have a big date where they're going to bring coffee to everybody's offices and try and tell them how their system was better. They never did. After they pounded into the building and spent all that money, they never even went and talked to people. But I mean, right now you're back to telephone being pretty much AT&T. Matter of fact, the night before this happened, well, this is now Wednesday, so Monday night, I see some of my buddies downstairs at the local watering hole, and one of the guys is with this big firm, and they have offices around the country. They just changed their whole system over to AT&T because I guess they couldn't find anybody else. $300,000, Kevin. So the darn thing goes on last week. Nothing works. Phones don't work. They don't bounce from phone to phone. They don't do anything of what they're supposed to do. And the AT&T solution is, well, you need another $120,000. We're going to replace all the routers. I mean, there's no place else like to go with these guys. And we have 800 numbers here, two for PTI and one for Stacks and Jacks. It took us 4 months to port those over, and now they're 100 hours a month, and they used to be just another number. Now, there's somebody who got himself involved in the 800 number loop, and they're 100 hours a month for what? After there's a line, you're paying for your number now. And I get a load of this. I get the bill for just the one line for Stacks and Jacks. It's $67 a month for one line, like for a long time. Then it goes to $77. Now, 2 months ago, it's still $77. There's a $10 customer charge on top of the $77. Now, what moron in Springfield said okay to that? Because you know all this stuff is run by... I mean, do these people...
Yeah, what does that mean? A customer charge? You're getting charged just for being a customer?
Yeah. So I guess if we get rid of the line and we're just customers, we could charge $10 a month, like forever or something, because we used to be customers or what? But I mean, we've inserted, you know, a lot of... I mean, I get it. When you give people monopolies, you can't just let them charge everything. This goes back to railroads, for God's sake. Because you can't give people a monopoly, and then when the farmer says, I need to ship my grain, the guy says, how much you got? I mean, one implies the other. But over a long period of time, these people get so in bed with the regulators. The regulators are a bunch of, well, not all, but I think a lot of them are a bunch of young kids. They don't know what the hell they're talking about. And these guys come in, oh, man, you wouldn't believe the expenses, and we got to raise this. And there's never another side. It's never an arm's-length transaction. There's never, you might get a people's utility, but who the hell do you think showed up to fight the customer charge? I mean, it's not worthwhile for anybody to do it. There's a word for that, Kevin, where you're, like in politics, or in, where if all of a sudden the city raises a, you know, raises the parking fee. It's enough for everybody to get pissed off. It's like almost like a class action suit. I mean, nobody's going to stop work, grab a sandwich sign, and walk up and down in front of City Hall because your parking rate went up from $10 a month to $20. But it pisses people off. And at the end of the day, it grinds on you. And at the end of several years, and this happens all over the place, it's never enough to cause you to do something. Yet it's enough that at the end of the month or the end of the year, when it happens all over the place, it makes a major difference to your life. But there was a term.
Yeah, it's the you get to the proverbial straw.
Yeah.
That finally breaks the camel's back.
Well, and that's why when you see people right now, I honestly believe this, and I God, I hope I'm wrong. What you're seeing right now in society with everybody taking concealed carries, everybody, you can't buy a bullet. Everybody getting so pissed off about everything, whether it's COVID, whatever the subject is, people are just underlyingly pissed off. I mean, you can't drive down the street without somebody honking at you. I mean, there is a trend here that I think everybody sees but our politicians, and it's just not good, Kevin. You see it in the stock market. You see it everywhere. I mean, the idea, if you can find an angle, if you can do something, if you can get the next dime from somebody, I've never seen a society like this in my lifetime. I mean, maybe before it was, I mean, surely it was during the Depression and other times, but this whole, something is seriously wrong here. And we talk about it in very various different levels. I always come at it from the economic side. But even our response to China, I mean, which we've been talking about, and I really missed yesterday because Jeff was probably going to tell us all about his Amazon thing and the new Luckbox magazine. But take a look at Amazon. People are bitching and moaning about Amazon. They just bought another company yesterday. You know, for another $9 billion. These guys, they're running roughshod over everybody. Now, whether it's all good or bad, the point is, as Jack Callen used to say in the board meetings, we don't know where we're going, but we're well on our way. But does anybody have any sort of an end game of where we're going to, where we're going to say no to Amazon? I mean, at some point here, every one of these mergers should just be a no in the drug industry. Certainly, do you need any more people buying people as parts of the cable channels? I mean, talk about a place where there was not going to be no commercials and anybody could have a station. That hasn't happened, has it? I just wonder where this is. When I first started trading, this is the way you made any kind of decisions, because there were no computers around, and when you had to do it in the office. So when you went down to the floor with your spread, you had to already make the mental thoughts that, okay, if the stack goes from 50 to 500, do I want to pay the same price for the spread or don't I? So you got a very good education by just saying, all right, what if the stack moves here or there? I mean, we don't seem to have any of this thought process collectively, Kevin, or maybe there's too much stuff going on. Okay, what if we fast forward this, and every 2 months Amazon buys somebody, what are we going to look like in 5 years? Are we then going to say, God, these guys are too big? It's going to be kind of too late. And I'm not saying they're too big.
Yeah, we won't be able to unwind from it. But think about this, because the last year has been an extreme example, but we've sort of been chipping away for a while. So, how is it that we don't that we aren't recognizing it? That we that things are, you know, as I always like to say, it happens all very, very slowly, and then it happens suddenly, or at least suddenly you realize it. You know, how do we play the game now? We divide people.
Yeah.
We divide ourselves by race, by tribe, by political stripe, by genders, and it's done very intentionally by politicians for votes. So we do all of that like crazy, and now we have the corporations in there taking sides, and then we have people pushing. And then how many large businesses are so beholden to China at this point that we can't criticize there? And then bit by bit, what do we learn about about COVID-19? And what's all the stuff that we've gotten in the last week or two just on Fauci alone? About what he knew, when he knew it, and this whole idea that the idea that COVID-19 came out of the lab in Wuhan was dismissed and criticized and called, it was claimed to be debunked on some major media outlets, and then other people who dared to bring it up would be ostracized in their professions. So you had all of this kind of stuff going on, and only to find out that it was probably there. And in fact, the Wall Street Journal reported this week that we had a warning from Thailand intelligence in November of 2019 that something had happened at the lab in Wuhan, and everybody knew that. They warned the CDC directly. You can't tell me Fauci didn't know that. So, once people start to realize that they're being lied to, but we're getting it in dribs, the typical lie that was the best example is the Clintons. Always admit to as much as you think people will buy and that will make them go away, and then hold off until that proves to be untrue, and then admit to a little bit more. This is how we get manipulated in this society, and this is how people get away with stuff as a result of it.
We got to go to break here, but it's exactly a follow through of the big lie theory, Madoff Hitler. Exactly the follow through. I mean, you don't expect people of that level to lie to you, even if you think the guy's a sleazebag. You don't. I mean, even though we could say. Even the Trump followers, I mean, Trump lied, but all the rest of these guys lied too. I'm not saying they're equal. But the point is, you really don't expect even Trump to walk up to the podium and give you a whopper. You just don't. I mean, but it happens. I mean, and now, like you say, Kevin, they've refined that to not just the big lie, but a bunch of little lies. Right?
And the accumulation of it. And when you start saying who's beholden to whom, then it really starts to create a frightening picture. That's where we are now.
We got a dash, but either one of you guys, I'll find it on break, but either one of you guys off the top of your head, who was the sports figure or the business figure this week that had to have the huge apology because he referred to Taiwan as a country?
Yeah, an actor. Yeah. Yes. And he had to apologize in Mandarin.
Oh, my God. SP futures up 14, NASDAQ futures up 63. That's scary. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox. The Control Freak's Guide to Life, Money, and Probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. He's Mr. Weber. S&P futures up 12.50. NASDAQ futures up 62. We were up mostly yesterday, and then we kind of ducked on the close. Surprising, because this week is usually a positive week, and of course everybody is piling into the upside, and you know, Fed's still putting money in, and that's where we're going for a while. And Cramer, gotta keep buying the dip. God, when this all ends someday, I sure hope they play back all the stuff that guy says on TV, but they probably won't. They were playing back a bunch of stuff to, hey, you know what I did here, Andy? Well, we'll talk about it after all this stuff. Dow futures, up 99. We've got, over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 23.1%, so not very much. FTSE down 17.2%. These guys closed before we ducked yesterday, so kind of catch up here. CAC around up 1, call that flat. Over in Asia, Nikkei up 88.3%, Shanghai up 12.4%. Hang Seng, however, up 255, that's 0.9%. New Zealand dollar jumps following their central bank announcement. But the rest of the stuff over there is pretty much mixed. Yesterday, as a way of review, Dow was down 81, S&P was down 9, NASDAQ was down 4, so very slight to the downside. Bonds, 1.56 on the Fed just keeps buying these things in here, because Fed calms inflation concerns. We're talking a bit about the lady from San Francisco. The fact that these people are getting paid by me just bothers me. Bund, minus 0.20. So they're going the other way. They were, looked like they were going to be positive there for a bit, but now they're not. Japan, positive 0.07. UK down to 0.75. They were up to 0.88 a couple weeks ago. So interest rates are actually going down, which is a little odd. There's a Fed, well, I guess it's not odd. They're pouring more money in. Oil up, down 20 cents, 65.87. Brent down 11, 68.54. Natural gas up 3 cents, 2.95. RBOB unchanged at 2.12. Gold up 9.20, 19.07. We did break through 1900. Wow. Silver up 12 cents, 28.18. Copper up 2 cents, 4.53. And, crypto, we're back up to 39,772 after trading 32,000 on this Bitcoin. So is it go down again this weekend, Maddie, and climb back all next week? Is that the drift with this thing? What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports? Another injury on the Cubs. What the hell?
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We had an earlier crash that happened at about 2 a.m. this morning on the inbound Kennedy involving a FedEx semi 18-wheeler that apparently rolled over and spread debris and packages all across the expressway.
So if you don't get your FedEx, you know why?
Yeah, I would be pissed if I was expecting my shipment today.
Shipment of what?
Well, whatever I ordered, of course.
With contraband?
I guess for the better part of the last 4 hours, a cleanup has been underway to
That's why we were late. We had to go around it.
Right, and this is just before Division on the inbound Kennedy, and now they've got it down to just the two right lanes are blocked. But it's still affecting traffic, as you can imagine, coming inbound on the Kennedy. So keep that in mind. Should be clear soon enough, but 4 hours in and the two right lanes are still blocked. So it must have been a pretty widespread issue. No issues on the outbound side. Edens is still looking okay. Eisenhower traffic starting to build, but no accidents to report.
You think the guys clean it up or like shaking the boxes, see if there's anything in there worthwhile?
Of course. And the ones that accidentally ripped open? Yeah. I mean, sure, put that in your pocket. Stevenson is probably our slowest moving expressway besides the Kennedy. No accident, but lots of high traffic volume and red on the screen here. So keep that in mind if you're heading in on I-55. Southside expressways, Dan Ryan, I-57, and the Bishop Ford are looking okay. You'll see some brake lights as you approach the circle, but no accidents. Lakeshore Drive is quiet in both directions. Weather today, lots of rain in the forecast and cooler temperatures, a high of 79. Right now it is rainy and 66 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 98 today. Right now it's clear and 73. In sports, the Cubs rallied back to beat the Pirates behind Jock Peterson's two home runs, 4-3 last night. Cubs are rolling right now, playing good ball. White Sox, Cubs are just a half a game out of first place, believe it or not, after their terrible April.
Well, the Sox are sure helping them.
White Sox are helping them. They blew out the Cardinals again last night. 8-3 was the final, as the Sox are playing good ball as well, now that they got out of New York. Diamondbacks not playing good ball. They're in dead last after getting blown out by the Giants 8-0.
They're screwed with those three good teams in that division.
Yeah. NBA basketball, the Suns are in the playoffs, and after winning game one, they were looking to take complete control over the defending champs, but LeBron James and the Lakers had something to say about that, and they pretty much led wire to wire down in Phoenix and beat the Suns 109-102, knotting up that series at one game apiece. Chief.
So Horner's is hurt. The your buddy, the longest running umpire last night, eh?
Joe West. Yeah. Yes, I would say maybe the worst umpire of my lifetime. Not my generation, but of me watching baseball my whole life. I would say he's probably the worst. Or Angel Hernandez is the worst. One of those two.
Well, he's
Angel Hernandez is maybe the worst. Joe West is maybe the second worst. They get every call wrong and they're abrasive.
Last night, compared to the last four or five guys I've watched, he did a better job at home plate than any of the other dudes.
Well, the guy that we watched on Sunday Night Baseball, at the end of the game, he finished with an 83% success rate, which was the worst called game of the season.
Yeah.
And he was a rookie umpire. That guy was terrible. Now, he's 30 years old. I assume he's going to get better. Joe West never got better, and Angel Hernandez is even worse. And they'd sucked for 50 years, and then also had bad attitudes and were just kind of assholes. So, I mean.
Well, Joe is controversial. You yell, but I saw a picture of him at one of those, the Marquee Network. He had one of the Cubs during the COVID for a game from like, you know, how many years ago. And there was a young Joe West. There he is. He's a big guy. He's like, what is he, like 6'5", 6'8"? There he was, slender. He looked like he was a, you know, like a player for God's sake. And, he still looked bad for 68.
Well, I wouldn't say he looks good. He weighs about 400 pounds.
Well, he's got the thing on underneath. Plus, you look heavier on TV.
I mean, yeah, I mean, maybe he weighs 375.
No, he's not anywhere near. But you know what? He, whatever. I mean, the fact is, when you hang in there 43 years, it's a lot.
And, it is, yeah. I don't know how he did it.
Well, the funny
part is, they got a strong union, and there's no doubt.
Regarding the Sunday game, you know it's bad when both sides are mad at the umpire. You know it's bad when both hitters and pitchers are mad at the umpire, and you know it's really bad when both sides, hitters and pitchers, are mad at the umpire.
Yeah, and David Ross got ejected.
He was all over the place.
Yeah, he was just dreadful. I mean, he called the low strike, and then he called the high strike, and then he called the outside corner, and then he called the inside corner. I mean,
outside of the outside corner.
Yeah, he was
inside
way out
of the inside corner.
He was way
exactly,
out.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know what? And now with pitch tracks, you know, everywhere, you can tell when an umpire is really having a great game, and I've seen so many of those, and I marvel at how good some of the umpires are, and then how bad some of them are.
Well, some pitchers though make it. You can't help but if you look at the pitch tracks, you're not getting a, you know, obviously if the thing's totally outside, you're getting a pretty good idea. But when you see a ball moving a lot, and your mind tells you you equate the front part of the plate with where the catcher catches it. And that's what you look at on the fish and the track, and that's not exactly the way it's supposed to get called.
Well, pitch tracks doesn't just track where the catcher.
I'm saying, we're not talking about what they're using.
They have follow up replays that show the depth. You know,
I understand
and show
it, but
where it crossed.
What I'm saying on a regular old pitch,
you know, it's pretty darn good, Tom.
I'm talking about on a regular old pitch when you're just watching it and you see the square. And you see where you're just looking at where the catcher catches it and where the square is. That's not the same as the pitch track. That's just the square on TV that you watch. In other words,
right? It's when the pitch dots the square.
Yeah, but I'm saying there could be a difference between a backup curveball that a catcher catches in the zone, but it actually went all the way around the plate.
Yeah, I understand that.
Well, I don't think a whole lot of people do. You do because you played your whole life. But I'm saying it's not exactly accurate. I mean, it's not a fait accompli. But then they have the three-dimensional one you're talking about that's obviously better, right?
Yes.
But, I mean, most guys, you miss one or two, it's not the end of the world. But these guys...
Well, I don't think anyone complains if on a particular day you're calling the outside corner 2 inches off the plate all game for both teams. You know, hitters kind of adjust. It's a borderline call, and it's like, all right, he's given the pitcher the outside corner. I need to adjust. But when you give 2 inches off the outside corner, and then you give 2 inches off the inside corner, and then you give 3 inches down, it's like, what the hell am I supposed to do?
Oh yeah,
here?
Because you can't get them all.
Right.
Well, on last night's games though, I can't remember now if it was Steve Stone or if it was Jim Deshaies, but it was one of the two guys, and they were talking about the idea that people always say, well, the ball players just say be consistent. And then he laughed and he said, that's a load.
Yeah.
No, they want it called right.
Right, that's right.
Well, when he says be consistent, and I, for a guy who's pitched softball forever, you look at where these guys stand. I don't want to make this too long of a story, but wherever they stand, you can sort of tell where their blind spot's going to be. It's funny because one of the guys I know, I mean, I don't know, I've met him, I've talked to him for a long time, Mike Tompain. Or what's his name? John Tompain. Whatever it is. His last name's Tompain. I knew his uncle played basketball 2 days a week. When I saw him, his first game, he was a home plate umpire. He's a slender guy. Now he's gotten a little bigger. But he would crouch way low, almost down to where the catcher's shoulder is. And I'm sitting there going, okay, this guy's going to call a low strike because that's where he is. And that's what he did. I mean, in softball forever, if the guy lines up to the left of the catcher, you work the other corner because they can't see it. Back when in the American League, they used to say they called a high strike. Okay, well, fine, they did. Back when they had the outside chest protector and the National League had the inside one. Because the guy, you see the old baseball movies, you see the catcher's face, and right above his face, you see the umpire's face. Well, those guys, they virtually never missed an inside-out strike because they were right over the middle of the plate. But the part they couldn't see was down by the knees, and that's the one they'd blow, basically. So now the more a guy gets down and protects himself, the more the outside corner, because they usually take the inside, what Steve Stone referred to last night, the inside slant or something, the outside corner is going to be the one but some of these pitchers, the guys that are really good, you guys know, they're on the edge all night long. I mean, there's not a pitch that isn't like, I mean, that isn't, you know, right on, seemingly right on the line. And then, you know, that's a tough game because you're gonna call one, it's right on the edge of ball, and then the next pitch, you might call a strike and it's in the same spot because it's right there. I mean, some pitchers, the guys are all over the place. I mean, it's either in the dirt, well, that's an easy one, or it's right down the middle. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I don't know if you guys agree with me or not, but I've watched some of these pitchers are right on the edge. The whole, I mean, what's his name? When he's pitching good, Hendricks is in, I'll use the term, in the black the whole time. I mean, he's got to be real hard to umpire because you've got to be calling, if he has 10 pitches the same place, you've got to be calling five of them strikes and five of them balls, and they're the same pitch. I mean, that would be really tough, I think. You guys have a comment?
Yep. So just a couple of thoughts. One is that I absolutely believe that the technology has made umpires better, you know, in general, because now there is a basis for a really solid basis for evaluating them. And so, you know, they can weed out the guys who are consistently not good or who don't improve. You know, you might get a rookie umpire who's just not that good yet, but will get better. And so you also have a basis for coaching guys when you start saying you're consistently giving away 2 inches outside of the strike zone on the outside corner. Okay, you know, people can start adjusting and working on it. The other part, though, I'll say is, you know, a lot of it is timing. So it's when do you make the really bad call? You know, when you get in a game situation and you totally take a batter out of his at bat, you know, when he should have the advantage and he doesn't, or vice versa, when the pitcher has a guy struck out. You know, how many times do you see that? The pitcher has a guy struck out, he doesn't get the call, guy winds up getting a base hit, and it's a game situation. Then, you know, the umpires just really kind of screwed him, and people get really irritated about that. They have to be on their game in the big at the big moments. They expect the umpires to be on their game at the big moments too.
Well, you also are supposed to, as a pitcher. I mean, certainly in softball, if one of your guys makes an error, it's not a time to get down. It's a time to bear down, right? As if you're pitching. I mean, it's just, what was the one the other night? I don't know how the replays go, but the Cubs. This is after Ross got booted. I don't know who took over the.
Andy Green's their bench coach. He took over.
What's the story on challenges? Because they made a challenge in the first inning and one at first base where they were obviously wrong, and sure enough, they came back in like 2 seconds that they were wrong. Well, later in the game, there was a play at third base, and Bodie sort of he didn't know if he got dragged off the bag or not because he had the guy out, and then he swiped with the tag. And,
yeah, so you're allotted one challenge per game, and if you get it wrong, then you're out of challenges. If you get it right and the call is overturned, then you get to keep your challenge and use it one more time. The game you're talking about, you're exactly right. They did a challenge early in the game that was clearly not a good challenge, and they lost that challenge. And then
we call those challenges that are clearly not right, Lovie Smith challenge.
Right, yeah. The Lovie Smith challenge flag. And then later in the game, they had the guy out at third, and they didn't challenge because they were out of challenges. Now, what Andy Green missed on is that the good managers, you can go to the umpiring crew without a challenge and ask them to talk about the play and basically have a crew chief sort of challenge, and the umpires can get together and decide, you know, did we miss that, you know, and they didn't take advantage of that opportunity.
Well, because I've never seen anything like that one, because I mean, you saw it, Kevin, Matty obviously did, because not only did his foot not leave the bag, when he panicked and made the swipe tag, he tagged him.
He got him twice.
He got him twice.
Yeah, he got him twice. And if you go to the umpiring crew chief and you talk to him reasonably and say, you know, hey, we're out of challenges, but I think you guys missed that one. You know, you should talk about it and take a look at it. Not only can the crew get together and talk about it, but the crew chief can actually initiate a review. I don't know if that's like the seventh inning or later. Yeah, I think it's the seventh inning or later.
Yeah, it is a late game provision.
Which would have applied in that particular play that you're talking about. It was a 0-0 game. It was a huge play at the time. Cubs somehow ended up getting out of the inning anyway.
Yeah.
But the Cardinals got four outs there. But Andy Green, his failure there was to not try to initiate the crew chief review, which he could have done since it was after the seventh inning.
Well, whenever you do something that you trick the umpire, if you go try and, I mean, Kevin and I shared first base for years. We would play in a doubleheader league. We'd each play first base a game and caught a game. Kevin was better than me, though. But the, if you think for a second that you left the bag and you try and tag the guy, even if you, in your heart of hearts, you weren't sure, the umpire is gonna assume that you were right when you tried to tag him. I mean, you're never gonna, it's very hard to get the call. I think I missed the bag. I left too soon, but maybe you really didn't. They're going to assume you're right, right, Kevin? I mean, because when Bodie went to tag the guy,
I don't know. I don't ever remember an umpire assuming I was right.
No, what I'm saying is, I mean, as soon as Bodie went to give the guy the tag,
you're saying if he didn't do the second tag,
yeah,
then the umpire might have. If he was more,
yeah,
confident on the first one,
yes,
then the umpire might have assumed that,
yeah,
he got him the first time.
Once he did the sweep.
Oh, I see. Yeah, well, you wouldn't have tried to tag him if you weren't off the base.
Right. Right,
is what you're saying is the assumption.
Right,
and I could see that. Yeah, but if I knew I was going to be off the base, I always went for the tag, and whether I got him or not, I bitched about it to the umpire if I didn't get the call.
By the way, were you at the game last night?
That was just my habit, because I wanted to make sure that he was looking for tags, if necessary, because I had the likes of your brother Dan giving me crazy ass throws all over the place.
He used to be wilder.
Actually, Dan was always an accurate thrower.
We had some other guys that were not.
We occasionally had the others, but the group I played with on the north side, Tom, we played together over 20 years. They couldn't fool me. I knew if Dave Coppin was going to be wild, I knew exactly where he was going to be wild, and I was already there before he threw the ball.
Well, I always had trouble. I mean, I didn't have LeBron James' huge hands, but I always had trouble if somebody, like Dan, threw a heavy ball, but it came in end over end. It wanted to die in your hands. But some guys would have this wacky, like, three-quarter arm throw where the thing came in with, like, side spin. It definitely wanted to leave. When it hit, it was like trying to hit a ping pong ball. It was moving like a curveball, but in softball, obviously, you're just using your hands. The thing really wanted to explode out of your hands. Where some people could throw it real hard, but it was as soon as it hit, it stayed. At least I had that problem.
Yeah, you could ride with the action of the ball.
Yeah, but anyway.
By the way, real quick, Nico Horner, like you mentioned, Chief, blew out his hamstring last night.
Blew it out.
Well, pulled his hamstring last night and got helped off the field. And they're saying, preliminary first look at it, he's obviously going on the IL. It's probably 3 to 4 weeks is what they're saying.
Wow.
And talk about a kid that spring training didn't make the team, which was a surprise to him, certainly, and to a lot of other people.
Was to me.
So he starts at AAA, and then he gets called up, mostly because of injury and poor performance. The team really struggled in the month of April. So he gets called up, 3 weeks into the season. And in those 3 weeks, he basically starts every day at second base. They've also put him a little bit at shortstop, a little bit at third, a little bit in the outfield, here and there. But pretty much every day at second base. He's batting .338 with a 1.1 war in that very brief period of time. .405 on base percentage. The guy has been basically playing at an all-star level, and once he got called up, the Cubs have been a completely different team.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, to the point where I think they are 7-8 games above .500 since they called him up, and I think it's going to be an absolutely huge loss because
especially since Duffy's down too.
Yeah, and basically him and Duffy have kind of been the two guys that have really kind of turned things around for the Cubs. From a contact perspective, just putting the ball in play, wreaking havoc on the bases, playing multiple positions, and then that's allowed guys that got off to slow starts like Jock Peterson, who's really picked it up, Javi and Rizzo, who had terrible Aprils and have had really good Mays. Those guys really kind of bridged that gap, and I think Nico being out is going to hurt bad.
Yeah, I mean he's a
yeah, I do too, and I thought as I watched that last night, and I've seen it so many other times where, a guy running hard and hits the base. I got to believe that there's something we can do better with bases. When you think about what that base is, what is it, raised up about 2 inches or so?
Yeah, I was there today to Corey Patterson. It's, we wrecked his knee.
And it's a fairly hard surface. it seems like some, you know, it's really easy for someone to, you know, jam anything on there, whether it's, you know, pull hamstrings or hit it hard and the wrong way with and hurt an ankle or something like that. It just seems like there's too many injuries on the base, and there's got to be a way to make that a little bit softer, a little bit of a softer landing. I know the first baseman needs some place to be able to find the base. You know, I'm certainly sympathetic, having played at that position for a long time. You got to be able to find the base, and you want to be able to stretch off of it, and all of that. But you know, it seems to be one area where the technology hasn't changed in the slightest.
Well, it also,
and I wish it would.
I think one of the issues is, and this is just off the top of my head, it's, I mean, when we first started, imagine this, Matty, when we first started, steel spikes were legal in softball. I mean, can you imagine that?
I really can't, because they've never been legal since I've been playing for 20 years.
The one place I think that rubber spikes are much better in terms of injury is when you actually hit the bag. The steel spikes, if the bag is wet or something, it's dangerous. Where the rubber spikes, I don't think anywhere near as bad, Kevin.
Well,
when you actually hit the
Deshaies bag. And,
oh, it depends. You know, the rubber, the old soccer style.
Not those. I mean the good
ones.
Yeah,
those probably were better because they had a little give built into them. But the plastic ones, I think.
Oh, yeah, they're not plastic.
So many people use, I think those are as hard as.
I'm talking about the rubber ones that we used to use.
Steel spikes. You know, they may not be as sharp as the steel spikes, but they're as hard.
It's interesting that Kevin brings that up, because I don't know if you were watching the game last week. I think it was last Tuesday night against the Nationals. Deshaies and Schiambi were actually talking about sort of the outdatedness of the bases, specifically pertaining to on a wet, rainy night. If you remember that game, it kind of drizzled the entire night.
Yeah.
And they played through it because it never rained hard. And one of the Nationals players, of course, you know, hits a ball that looked like a double off the bat, and rounding first, you know, he slips on the wet base and goes down and has to scramble back to first, and I think he was slightly injured because of that. And they, you know, I don't know if Schiambi brought it up or if JD brought it up, but they were basically like, isn't it kind of outdated and stupid that we still use these big raised, like, rubber bases or whatever, plastic bases, whatever they're made out of, and as soon as they get any sort of wetness on them, guys just fall down and get hurt.
Well, some of these guys, I mean, I'm not, we always talk about fundamentals, but most of these dudes do not know how to run the bases. I mean, it's one of the guys who, one of the guys I played with from Pullman, talk about a guy who had an interesting career. He was he was a superior athlete, MHL or, you know, not Major League Baseball potential, but he played 130 games as a shortstop for the Air Force All-Stars, 12-inch. And I mean, he was one hell of a softball player. He couldn't hit that well, 16-inch, but, boy, he could play defense. And he played flag football for those guys, too. I mean, they would fly him on a plane just to get him to play somewhere. But when this guy, and he wasn't that fast, Kevin, but when he ran, especially when they're 55-foot bases, when he ran, he would absolutely cut off the inner corner. He would never land on the base. He would cut right off the corner perfectly at every base. So when he hit a home run, I'll bet he ran 15 feet less than anybody else, because he didn't land on top of the base, go sliding into the outfield or anything like that. He would actually land where he would just touch the inside corner and like push off it. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen anybody fundamentally that sound. These guys, the last thing you want to do is take the big... I mean, when Corey Patterson got hurt, it wasn't rainy, but he took the big jump and landed in the middle of the bag. You cannot do that. That is absolutely wrong.
There's definitely an art to running the bases that some guys don't have.
I mean, even running the first base.
Yeah, but I agree with you, Tom. I always felt there was at least a full step between every base. A full step to be had, taking good angles and cutting hard. And Lord knows I needed it. So.
Well, I got a real quick question for you, gentlemen. Now you guys are mavens, and Russell's on the mic. How long actually is it between home plate and third base, and is the infield a perfect square? Russell's over there.
I don't know. I'm guessing it's not 90 feet, because you wouldn't be asking.
No. Don't go psycho on me. Don't try to analyze me. Just answer the question. Jesus.
You know, I definitely try not to analyze you.
Yes.
It should be 90 feet, but isn't it 90 feet to the back of the base?
Yeah, it's actually since they went with the original dimensions where the plate didn't look like it did now. They had a regular base at home plate. So actually the 90 feet is from the tip of the point to the back of the bag at third base. But then second base, it's to the middle of the base. So it actually is 87 and a half feet from the very front of the home plate to the very front of third base, which I never knew. And in order to make proper for it to be 90 feet now to the middle of second base has to be further out in the outfield because that's to the middle of the bag. I never knew that. All the years that I've stepped off fields, I never even dreamed of that. But see, you learn something every day.
Well, you know, all the years that I played first base, I used to be able to just take the base out, stand where, you know, eyeball it, you know, and then drop the base down and leave it there, and then the umpire would come pacing off the bases, and he would take his final step right on the base, and then we would stake it right where right where I put it, just from looking at it.
I could do that on the
used to the angles.
I could do that on the mound too. Obviously, after a bazillion games, Kevin, thank you. SP Futures up 12, NASDAQ Futures up 58. Come back. We have Mr. Russell Rhodes. We're going to talk about volatility, this market, buy the dip. What's going on? The Fed, all kinds of stuff that he's going to enlighten us on. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com. That's AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now. Right
here, right now. There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Russell Rhodes, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Russell, welcome. Good to see you in the office. And you're looking sharp today.
Well, thanks. I'm dressed
up. Got the sport coat on and everything.
It's time to start dressing like adults again.
I don't like that at all.
I know.
Tell you what, you look and see somebody in a suit, you look at him almost like do a double take these days.
I had three people say good luck at the job interview.
Yeah, well, that's better than saying good luck with the loan. Just saying.
good luck in court. There.
Yeah, good luck in court. God, people want, you know, it's so bizarre. I obviously I try and keep believe it or not, I try and keep my mouth shut on this COVID thing as much as I can because, I mean, it's, people are so, but I, especially if you're talking to somebody who's a, you know, city, state, or federal employee, this whole idea about them deciding whether they can go back to work or not, does the garbage guy get a chance to decide whether he's going to go to work?
Essential services.
Yeah.
Been working all along.
Well, you know, if you define yourself as a non-essential service, I want to pay you like that. Does it work both ways?
It does not work both ways, but there are certain essential services people I think that should be brought up to par with everybody else. But that is a whole other discussion and a can of worms that we don't want to get into.
How much does a garbage man in the city make? I bet they make pretty good money. If I had to guess.
Does the city, you know, I live in the burbs where they outsource it. And they actually changed outsource companies a few months ago out in Clarendon Hills. That was kind of, you know.
They use Flood, or who do they use?
I don't even know. I just know that we left all the, it should be waste management because the next suburb over is where the Hazanga, where Wayne Hazanga used to have his house. I don't know if he's still there.
He just died.
What?
One of them just died.
There are a bunch of them. My kids actually go to the school where all the Hazanga family goes, at least through eighth grade. They'll both be in high school this time next year.
They've been around a long time.
Yeah.
My
kids. Well, it feels like they've been around a long time too. They're freaking awesome.
When we moved into our bungalow in like 1959 and had concrete for the apron for the driveway, and sure enough, it was a red striped truck. A long time ago.
Yep. So, I don't know what they make in the city, but they out in all the burbs. They're not public employees. They're, you know, private employees.
I think the people that pick up the recycling are waste management employees. Is that right, Chief? It's the WM truck. It's not like the light blue, you know, streets and sanitation truck, is it?
That I'm not sure. I'm never around when they come by, but they don't come by very often. Not like the other guys. The other guys are every Wednesday, but the Flood Brothers gets all the Park District stuff. They're there at like 5 a.m.
And those guys are. My wife went to high school with, the kids of the Flood Brothers. They were based out in Bartlett, like northwest suburbs. And they've got talk about a huge company that's been around forever.
They're real. One of them, if it's waste, one of them is real big in the cannabis business too now. They're buying into there.
Ooh, that reminds me, I got an errand to run.
Oh, you got to go buy some gummies?
Yeah, well, something like that.
I wonder, is it having any effect at Wrigley Field? Because they're going to be letting everybody in, in another couple of weeks, or going to 60%?
Well, yeah, they're at 60% now. So the Sox are at 60% began on Monday. And then when the Cubs get home, I think this weekend, it'll be in effect for them as well.
Mm-hmm. Hey, since we're on the sports thing and opening up and all that kind of stuff, did you guys see that the Big Ten moved their media days down to Indianapolis just because?
I read that.
Yeah,
Did they say why?
Yeah, because they're concerned at the pace of opening up things here versus down there, and they're more comfortable in not having to cancel down there than here.
There you go.
So you can take that for what it's worth.
The average garbage man in Chicago makes $17 an hour.
Okay.
That'll get bumped when the national minimum wage. I'll bet you it's tied to the national minimum wage.
Yeah, I would have guessed they made more than that, to be honest.
I would, too.
It averages between 31 and 44 a year, so there must be some. When you become a driver, you probably get higher, I would guess.
There's all kinds of extras. That's probably based on a 40-hour work week, and I'll bet you can easily claim 50 or 60 if you barely try.
Plus they spend how many weekends sitting near the Best Buys and the garbage trucks when we had all the riots and
just blocking parking lots.
Yeah. it's
they should get hazard pay for that. Get hazard pay.
What are the people? I mean, what is? Do our creatures have any idea of how much the city is sinking in terms of every little thing, in terms of the money people are spending here and or not spending here? I mean, they're.
I'm leaving.
Yeah, but your suburbs are reasonably okay.
I don't even want to come down. I mean, I love you guys, but I don't even want to come down here for work anymore. So
it reminds me of how long have you been coming down here?
20 plus years.
It reminds me now only getting worse than the very early 80s.
I moved here in the early 90s, and I was at the CME floor when they introduced Globex, and I think the introduction of 24-hour trading is what switched the loop around from being completely dead. I'd ride my bike down the lakefront path and tool around in the summertime in the loop, and there'd be no traffic whatsoever.
None.
There'd be nobody. And I always felt like that addition of basically the financial markets going from a 9-to-5 job to 24-5 created, you know, people actually living in the loop. At one time, there was only one person that lived in the loop.
Yeah.
The minister at the Methodist Church over near the State Center. Now, you know, and people never would have thought of living down here.
Well, right? And people,
but I'm. Yeah. But the point is I wonder if we go back to that.
Well, that's what I don't have. You could say a lot of bad things about Richard J. Daley, the first one,
mm-hmm.
and there's been a lot of mayors since. But I mean, I was young when he was mayor. Well, not that young, but I mean, the one thing I will say about the man is economically, he knew exactly what it took for a city to grow. And where all the money came from and how it all interconnected.
Mm-hmm.
And virtually everybody since then, even his kid, in my mind, are absolutely clueless about that. I mean, you hear people talking about the, we talk about this on the show, Russell, maybe more mm-hmm. so when you're here than when the rest of the guys, but everything depends on everything else. I mean, mm-hmm. the economy is like a human body. You know, it's the poster about the, about what part of the body should be boss. Did we ever see that?
I have not.
It was absolutely right. It was about where the brain said, well, it was the smartest, so it should be boss. And the heart said, well, nobody does anything without me. So, well, then let's say the part that goes over to fence last says, well, I should be boss. And everybody starts laughing. Why should you be boss? You're just, you know, the part. So that part closed up, and the brain got foggy, and the heart got weak. So it proves just to be boss, you don't have to be anything. You just got to be the part that goes over the fence. But the idea that why all of a sudden is the ridership on the Rock Island for Stunken? Why are people not commuting from the south suburbs? Do you think losing 2,500 people, 4,000 people on the trading floors might have anything to do with that?
Oh, absolutely.
Do you think yeah. these idiots would ever put two and two together on that?
No, absolutely, and I think what we've all learned is everybody, you stopped working on the floor, but you went upstairs, and you literally went upstairs in a building that was within a couple hundred yards of the floor that you came off of. People figured out now you just don't necessarily have to do that.
But the idea, Russell, we could have a esoteric discussion. I mean, I am not as much of a Luddite as people think in the sense that I don't want people running orders out to the pit like they used to. I mean, I get
right.
that. It should be faster, but the idea, what a lot of people I think don't get is how insidious this was and is, to the point where if you were standing in the IBM crowd on the floor, that somebody, some nefarious dude, could actually pay the Board of Trade or the SIBO to get a faster feed from this New York Stock Exchange in an office across the street and have an advantage on people on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how the hell did that ever happen? That a feed from the CBOE building could go faster to somebody else than on the floor?
There's a lot of smart people. The financial markets are constantly evolving. In fact, I want to work.
Well, they're becoming more evolving. Well, is a good term.
They're evolving, and I actually. I had a student this past semester in one of my graduate classes who's actually got an undergraduate degree in engineering in the biology space, and how things evolve in the biology space. And they actually have software that replicates it now. I'll bet you could tie that into the way that the financial markets have grown up and evolved.
As they
have changed, modernized, yeah. whatever word you want to use,
I'm not gonna use that
either. There are a lot of smart people out there that are always trying to find a workaround that they can profit from.
Well,
being quicker cable wise or whatever. It's funny you bring up the millisecond speed thing. They've tried to level the playing field around that, but there's still ways to get around
that
one. They have co-location centers for the New York Stock Exchange where everybody basically is in the same space, and their servers are equidistant from the trading servers.
I'm saying
they have. There was a period of time where they didn't, but then they started to see what the unfair part of it was.
There was a period of time where you could pay extra at the Board of Trade to get the trade. That's criminal. That's not a problem.
Well, and they stopped those practices once, you know, people figured out that it was creating an unfair advantage for certain folks.
I'll take the under on them stopping it.
Well, they've done their very best. They've addressed it.
Okay.
How's that? I know one exchange. I did some work with the Australian exchange a while back, and the regulators in Australia, I loved this one. They dictated that every firm that sent orders to that exchange, their server had to have the exact same length and cable, their machine to the trading server. And they dictated that it had to be a certain non-standard amount. So the Australian exchange had to spend about $1 million getting these non-standard size cables for all of the member firms.
Well, it's just a question there is an advantage there, but the exchanges were part of it for a while. The thing of it is, Russell, and this is the part that I think, and I don't know what to do about it. I mean, and it has to do with, you know, it gets into criminal law, it gets into everything,
mm-hmm.
you know, statute of limitations. But Kevin and I were talking about it a while back. Actually, it might have been Jeff and I, that you can clean something up, you can address something, but the advantage that people get by doing stuff like that, they never look back on the common man. The advantage mm-hmm. is so dramatic. Unless you are such an egotistical ass that you screw it up, which people have, people manage to screw up sex somebody's going to screw up heaven if there is such a place, but the point being is that you look at an Amazon. I mean, you can talk about them doing things right from now on. You can talk about, you know, Pfizer or somebody doing things right from now on.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter. I mean, Squibb doesn't exist anymore. They're part of Bristol Myers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're down to four or five real drug companies. Nobody's ever going to break into that group. It's never coming back the other way. It's not. They can behave from now forward. And you're never going to get the difference of 30% or whatever the difference of the tax rate overseas here was for 20 years. You're never going to get that back. These guys have more money than governments, for God's sake. And they're just going to continue to pick off firm after firm after firm. When you look at Amazon, they're going to own a piece of every single business because for 10 years they didn't pay taxes and other people did, sales tax, and people gleefully went there.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't matter if tomorrow you decide, okay, we're going to make it pay it from now on. Because that's kind of the idiot's approach. The people on the board of the CBO used to say, well, we'll make an example of this guy and be good going forward. What are you talking about? The firm you didn't discipline for 10 years now is 40 times bigger than anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I could tell you stories about some of the biggest firms now that are left and tell you some of the stories about how they got where they are and ignoring rules and everything. But what good does it do, Russell? They're not coming back. It's not like you can go back and spank them for something they did in the 90s.
No.
Once you get to that point, what are you going to do? I mean, you're not going to... It's like these companies that are so deep in China. I mean, Trump tried to do something. He was very ineffectual, I think. But he realized that you got a problem, and our people are so in bed with essentially the enemy. It's like, what would have happened if Japan didn't attack Pearl Harbor and we had people doing business with Hitler for 25 years? I mean, could we have unhinged that enough to fight? We had people like Lindbergh and Joe Kennedy and other people that were all in love with him because all they cared about was the market, and Hitler paid cash probably or gold. I mean, what can we do now people can't wait to get their crap back to buy stuff again from China. I mean, the containers are building up over here. All we did was screw up our exports and screw up a bunch of farmers up in North Dakota and in Minnesota, right? We're so ineffective that it's almost like we become eunuchs or something. I mean, I think. I mean, I make it harder than it is, but you can't. You're never going to go back. Who's the first drug company to move overseas? Was it Forest Labs?
May have been.
Moved to Bermuda or something. They took. Mm-hmm. I mean, the idea that you let people take U.S. patents offshore and charge the main company for use of the U.S. patent and dodge taxes here. I mean, what manner of moron let that happen?
Well, there are going to be smart people that always figure out a way. First off, if you're a company, you're supposed to be trying to figure out the best way to make profits. Theoretically do no harm, which is a huge gray area. And what you just described could be considered doing harm because they're not paying supposedly their fair share of taxes. Well, it's the government's job to set the rules, and it is the company's jobs to operate, legally within the rules. And government is not, in the United States, government is never, ever, ever going to attract the best and brightest. They don't pay enough. You can't tell me that I can't even think of a president that I would consider one of our best and brightest in any way, shape, or form. The best and brightest are.
They're the best and brightest in the sense they have a skill set that other people don't have.
Get themselves elected.
Right.
If you think about it, when you're voting for anything, you should be thinking of it as a job interview. And which one of these people you think is going to do the best job based on what you
like
them to do.
Yeah, but you
don't
get to pick on the two that are there.
You
don't get to pick on the selection process.
Right. And we're kind of stuck in the situation that we're stuck in. Basically they have legislated a two-party system where it's darn near impossible for a third person to come along and run for anything. I talked to somebody about what's involved, more out of curiosity, but I talked to somebody about what's involved in running for the House of Representatives, and the first thing that the parties want you to do is show up with, $250,000 worth of donors, and then they'll think about helping you out a little bit. But so you've got to come up with the money. You can't just grassroots start making your own posters like you're running for class president.
But I think somehow it is. I don't know what the.
I really do, and I think it's a disadvantage for us because if you're one of the best and brightest in Russia or even in China, I think your government's where you're actually going to do the best for yourself and for your family.
But I honestly think, though, Russell, you can say that, and by the way, you're correct. I hate the hell to say you're correct, but you're correct, and they don't pay, like a private industry.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nobody gets paid as much as a bank robber, right?
Right.
I mean, he's always getting paid more than that. But the idea is, I think that's somewhat of a cop-out because they get paid enough. I mean, it's not like
they do
I
can remember having this discussion with my father, and he said their motivations are different than ours. It's not necessarily that they want to make money, that they've got this desire to, be loved by the masses or have power or whatever. But their goals definitely are not altruistic.
But I'll give you a quick, and this is not, Andy of Mayberry, but when I worked on the MBTA project, when Pullman was building the railroad cars, and some of the guys worked for on the Amtrak. I wasn't on that one as much, although I ended up writing a whole bunch of papers about it later. So I actually ended up knowing more about that car than I did the one I was working on. But I mean, when we went to Boston, there were a couple of guys that were the procurement heads that were, your political sort of hacks. But I tell you what, when the engineers from there, you had a couple of guys at the MBTA. They were World War II guys. I mean, this is a long time ago. They were World War II guys that were engineers, or maybe when they got out of the war, they went to school, they got an engineering degree somewhere, and it worked, for the MBTA or someplace.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of loved their job. I don't think they made as much money as a head of an engineering firm here in Chicago. Matter of fact, I know they don't. But they did fine. I mean, when they came here to, I asked the engineers at Pullman, these guys know what they're doing. Oh yeah, those two guys are really good. They're real good. I mean, they're on a par with our guys. I mean, it wasn't like that. Everybody who works for the government gets the right to be a dodo because somebody else allegedly gets paid more. I mean, they get paid enough. I mean, it's it's not like you don't get paid like an engineer should get paid. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's not like the guy working in a pumping station here in Chicago should not know how to turn a pump on. I mean, I'm saying there's is he making as much as you know, pick some huge engineering firm, probably or Kenny Brothers or someplace? Probably not. You know, but those guys have got to the point now where they're bringing in business.
Yeah,
which is sort of different. But the regular people, it's like somebody who was a garbage man for the city shouldn't know how to drive the truck and sort of trash in it. Yeah, he should. We're kind of on the guy who's working for the patent office or for the antitrust division in Washington is getting paid more than enough to sit there and not let something walk by him that a third grader wouldn't let by him. I think. I mean, whether
should be.
Yeah. Now, whether he's making as much as the head of Jenner and Black, whose job is to bring in business, I'm saying the answer is no.
And what's his incentive at the government side versus the person to bring in more business?
What's their incentive? I'm saying your incentive. My incentive. I mean, is to do well for my clients. I mean,
right.
I would do that. That's what I show up to do every day. I know I have this old school look about it, but if you're going to plant flowers and that's your job, you're supposed to do a good job planting whatever it is. If you don't want to do it, go do something else. But once you're doing it, I mean, if you are a bus driver and you absolutely hate it, and every time somebody walks on you, you want to kick them under the bus, get something else.
Why should you get something else if you got a decent, steady, good paying job?
I'm saying if you absolutely hate what you're doing.
I think there are a lot of people that hate what they do.
Well, I mean, that's why they call it work. But
part of the reason I believe that is I believe people are happy to get paid to stay home. That's an issue that we've been addressing right now.
Well, we better address
and I know
it.
That's a debate that's out there, and I know the president said that's not true at all. I do not agree with that. Yeah, the one bad habit that I developed during the pandemic was watching Judge Judy from 4 to 5 every afternoon, and I see a bunch of people. It's enlightened me into how a lot of people live.
Yeah, it's an interesting world, isn't it?
It is. No, it is. And there are a lot of good people on there that I don't want to paint them all with a big blanket, but I can also tell you that I could see there are a lot of folks that are on there that are suing somebody over $300-$400 that are that probably were happy to be. And a lot of people are suing over not paying rent because of what was going on during COVID. They're actually showing up on there now. And I love when Judy says, you're using COVID as an excuse.
I thought she quit.
Pay your bills.
I thought she quit.
It's kind of like Alex Trebek, who passed away. There were a few more episodes after, she quit. She's going to have a new show where, she's going to do like family arbitrations. This should be good stuff.
Far and away the highest paid person on TV.
Yeah.
Far and away. She makes like $40 million a year.
Yep. Yeah.
I mean, other people that you think are huge stars, like Mark Harmon or somebody, they're like 7.
I mean, I know we got a break, but yeah. She did the right thing. She said when they started the show, she wanted to tie her name to the show so that they couldn't replace her.
Yeah, well.
Smart lady.
So that's what we do here.
Yeah.
You know, instead of Stacks and Jacks, it should be Webby or something.
Yeah, thank you.
Webby Inc. or something.
Yeah. Now we're talking. I'll get the logo made.
He's like the part that if he doesn't show up, the whole thing shuts down, by the way.
Oh, yeah. What it did yesterday, wasn't
you're,
there.
You're the heart, I'm the brain, and he's the one that could really screw us over.
If he'd have been here yesterday, there's no doubt. If he'd have been here yesterday, he'd have been down in the basement, he'd have fixed that wire. There's no doubt. That's my futures up 15, Nancy Futures up 66. Be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, North Bank Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Russell Rhodes in studio today. I love having when somebody's in. Mr. Matt Weber.
And he brought us coffee, which
and
is great.
And I put on pants.
Yeah. And he, well, you could be shorts today. What to do? Well, actually, it's raining.
I'm wearing shorts.
Yeah, so, well, you're like the guy in NCIS LA.
Well, I tell you what, the thing I love about COVID is that I don't have to shower before the show and then go into the office for 8 hours. I can just wake up, brush my teeth, throw clothes on, and head in, and that's a great thing.
Well, see, now, the COVID was make that worse for me because I used to come in without showering, not more than anyone needs to know, and I'd head right over to the club.
Right.
But then the club closed, so I wasn't about to do that to the people here, so now I got to get up earlier.
The extra 30 minutes of sleep is great.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, S&P futures up 14, NASDAQ futures up 64, the Dow futures up 85. So we're trying to push forward after we actually ducked down yesterday after being up most of the day. DAX down 17.1%, FTSE down 21.3%, CAC around down 2, which is, well, let's call that one unchanged. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 88.3%, Shanghai up 12.3%. Hang Seng, though, was up pretty good, up 0.9%, 255. As a way of review, yesterday, Dow was down 81, S&P down 9, NASDAQ down only 4, as the FANGs actually got a little bit of a rebound yesterday. Bonds, 10-year 1.56, so the rates are actually dropping and the bonds are going up, which is somewhat, as the Fed calmed inflation concerns, and even, so.
Transitory!
What did they say? The houses went up, what, 8% last month? Biggest move.
Good!
Ever, biggest move.
Keep
ever.
Going up!
Transitory!
Yeah. The problem with that, Maddie, is if you sell your place, you got to go somewhere.
And that's true.
You go rent until it crashes.
Well, that's true. The UK, UK 0.75. Oil, we got a little bit of a, well, we were rallying a little bit earlier, but now we're not. Down 32 cents, 65.75. Brent down 24, 68.41. Natural gas up 4 cents, 2.96, which is kind of odd for, it's pretty high for essentially almost summertime. RBOB is unchanged at 2.11. Gold, 19.10, up 12.50. Wow. I took a total outside shot into silver this week, being like way above the. You know, it's weird, Russell. There's people because I get the feed of the unusual option activity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, SLV is trading like 26. There'll be people that'll buy like the August 38s like 10,000 times. I'm like, what are they doing? I mean, it'd be so much better buying the 31-38 spread for the same price, but they don't. I mean, I don't know where these people get all this money, but. And boy, a fool and his money is soon parted. Anyway, copper up 2 cents. How was that for a?
That's what we're here for.
Yeah.
What was that saying again?
A fool and his money are soon parted.
Oh, I like that.
Yep. Bitcoin up 20. My mother used to say that. Bitcoin up 2,400, 40,000 now this weekend. Are we going to drop back down to 30 on the, over the weekend and then go back up next week? What is going on with this? Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. The inbound Kennedy is an absolute parking lot, as we talked about earlier.
We dodged it, Maddie.
We did. At 2 a.m. this morning, a FedEx truck rolled over on the inbound side just before Division, and all of the packages and contents of the truck spilled all across the expressway, and there's been a massive cleanup for the last 4 or 5 hours since the crash, and it still has the two right lanes blocked. From Cumberland into Division, you're just not moving. So
you know what made that worse?
What's that?
When Tom Hanks showed up and gathered up the packages and decided he was going to make sure they all got where they're supposed to go.
After he opened them and see what was in them.
Yes, of course, he kept the high dollar packages for himself. But yeah, so if you can get on after Division, like we did this morning, you're fine. But other than that, if you're getting on anywhere before that, you're just going to be sitting there. So avoid the inbound Kennedy, as that is completely blocked from Cumberland into Division. Outbound side looks okay. No issues on the Edens. Eisenhower and Stevenson traffic building heavily in both directions, but no accidents to report. We do have a crash on the south side on the Bishop Ford. Inbound side just before 137th Street, there's a crash blocking the left lane. And then east of there on the Indiana Toll Road, on the eastbound side at Calumet Avenue, there's a crash that's blocking the exit ramp. So not a great start to a Wednesday morning as far as traffic is concerned, but everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, lots of clouds and rain on and off throughout the day. A bit cooler, a high of 79. Right now it's rainy and 67 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies, a high of 98 today. Right now it's clear and 74. In sports, the Cubs have now won 7 out of 10 as they came back from a 3-run deficit to top the Pirates 4-3 last night. It was not without cost, however, as Nico Hoerner pulled his hamstring trying to beat out a bunt single at first base, and he is out indefinitely. Early reports are saying 3 to 4 weeks. We'll see.
That must be a tear.
Yeah, but not good for the Cubs' star young second baseman. White Sox are rolling too. They blew out the Cardinals again last night, 8-3, which also helped the Cubs out. So the Cubs are now a half game out of first place in the NL Central, while the White Sox maintain their 1.5 game lead in the AL Central as Cleveland won as well. Diamondbacks were blown out by the Giants, 8-0. NBA basketball, Suns and Lakers are now even at 1 game apiece as LeBron and Los Angeles beat the Suns in Phoenix, 109-102. Cheap.
Make just a quick comment on the market, Raymond. Tell a little interesting story that kind of ties together what you're talking about with the garbage collectors and so forth, Russell. But this GameStop is up from 135 on May 12th from 136. It's trading like 220 something now. It's like we've reached the point, and I listened to, they just happened to be a couple of ladies the other day, and then there was a guy after, talking about how anybody who doesn't get this Bitcoin, and I'm not talking about somebody, you know, who might be smart enough like you to buy into the Bitcoin because the thing's running up and you realize momentum kind of works in this market, at least until it doesn't, mm-hmm. To make some money. But the idea that these guys are now saying this is an entire new asset class, and if you don't believe it, like, you're just an old fart Luddite like me, the thing's worth nothing. I mean, there's nothing behind it. I mean, which isn't to say that governments aren't doing the same thing with their fiat currency, but the fact mm-hmm. is there's nothing behind it. To call something an asset class, when the guy last week talking about you got to buy it on fundamentals. What fundamentals? They don't own anything and there's no income. I mean, where's the fundamental? What am I missing? I mean, anyway,
the closest thing to fundamentals is how many people may be using it. That's really about it. But still, that's kind of like when I hear that, I think about the late 90s internet companies and how many clicks they're getting.
Yeah. Maddie, we got something on Twitter?
Yeah, we're getting a lot of comments based on the conversation. And Jim writes in regarding your guys' conversation right before the break. Government employment is risk-free. In a free market, risk should mean higher reward. No one in the industry gets the benefits as government employees, like paid accumulated sick days, pensions, holidays, no layoffs, health care. Government employment is the golden ticket.
It's kind of what it's become, but There's a line, if you ever, the original Born Identity, if you ever read the book or watched the movie,
mm-hmm.
and when one of the guys, a U.S. guy, dies, he gets shot by somebody, and the French guy says that he gave his life, that he spent his life in government service, and that used to be a high calling, and now it's not anymore. I mean, I think, with some of the, I have a couple of family members, one who's a, he ended up being a guy in Columbus, Ohio. What do you call the guys, Mandy? I don't think you probably don't know, because I don't know what they're not plumbers necessarily. But what are the guys like? If you go to the big, huge, you know, power plants that essentially, you know, push the water around in the people's houses, the big pumping stations, that big, huge machinery, and all that stuff that, you know, they actually have boilers in there. That,
mm-hmm.
I mean, those guys are highly skilled people. You know, they're not. Well, not that a guy putting your faucet in isn't highly skilled, because if he puts it in wrong, you know what happens.
You'll know about it.
Yeah, you'll know about it. But I'm saying is, the guy spent his life doing that, and he got a decent pension. He never probably made as much as somebody maybe couldn't. But he was absolutely proud of his job. That the city never, he ended up being head of that union, that there never was a water problem in the city of Columbus while he was there. I mean, it's not like it's a non-rewarding job. I mean, stuff has to work for people. I mean, you know, you drive the bus, you're polite when people get on, you get them to where they're supposed to be on time without running over somebody. It's not like it's easy to do. it's a job you should be proud of. I mean, I know I feel this way and I sound like I'm 100 years old, but to me, when I was a janitor for the Chicago Board of Education, the place was clean when I left. It was ready for teachers and kids the next morning. I did a nice job. I was going to college. I knew it wasn't my career, but I was proud doing it. I didn't mm-hmm. have a problem. I mean, I don't see why that attitude, just because somebody gets a pension, it's not like they can't wait to go sit on a sofa in the closet all day. It's not like people don't enjoy what they do and realize the purpose for it.
I think you're right about that, but I think it rubs people the wrong way when they read about the double dips in pensions.
Oh, without a doubt.
Getting a raise in your final year and all of a sudden your pension goes up by
300%. Oh, yeah. Gosh, yes.
Or just the idea that you have a pension in the first place when 99% of the people outside of government don't have a pension at all. And, just that idea, I think, bothers people. And then, like he says, talk about, you know, a risk-free sort of work environment. It's almost like it doesn't really matter the quality of your work. You're not going to get laid off if you have any sort of tenure or seniority. You're just there. And whereas people in the private sector feel so much pressure every day because you worry that, especially working from home, you worry, you know, every day, am I going to get laid off today? I mean, it's an anxiety filled work life, I think, for a lot of people, and they look at government employees saying, "I'm not going back to work. I'm staying home. And by the way, you're going to pay me a full salary." And it rubs a lot of people the wrong
without
way.
A doubt. But you still can't. You can't.
I'm not saying it should rub you the wrong way, but I'm just saying it does.
The people who take advantage of the system, people, especially I think in the Twitter world we're in, not the people didn't always used to do it. You can't generalize.
Right.
No matter what it is, you can't. I mean,
we hear about the bad guys an awful lot. That's, I think, that you hear about the person that shows up, sits at a desk, really, you know, takes naps during the day. So, hell, the two people that were supposed to be keeping an eye on Harvey Weinstein, they talk about what he was what they were actually doing when they were supposed to be checking on him. Both the guys took a nap the night he died, I think.
Yeah.
One of them was shopping for furniture online when they were supposed to be keeping an eye on him. It's when you hear about things like that, you don't hear about the guy that takes an awful lot of pride in what they do.
No.
But you know, because it's just not an interesting story.
We somehow don't weed out the bad people. I mean, look at the guys that were supposed to be watching Epstein. I mean, what were they doing? I mean,
they were not doing their job,
or they were getting paid by somebody to do something exactly opposite their job. Right?
I think they're being prosecuted for it. So, the people that are keeping an eye on his friend Giselle, they're going to keep a close eye on her because they have a motivation to do it now, which is it's beyond getting fired; it's actually being prosecuted for negligence.
But you get a totally different view, and that's why I really get ticked off about a lot of this racial stuff that's going back and forth. I mean, I understand that 84% of the murders in this town are black people shooting black people, or whoever else they happen to hit. But that doesn't give me the right to say all black people are out shooting people, because they aren't.
Right.
I mean, you don't get the right just because I'm an older white guy to say I'm a racist, because I'm not. No, nobody gets to generalize. And you're right. There's people in the city that you hear from that you can watch that, you know, have two pensions and three pensions. Those are the gamers. Those are the guys that always game the system. There are people on the SIBO floor that always, you know, they trade in the booth. They do something that nobody else would do. But I mean, if you think all city workers, whoever, you know, wrote the Twitter in, I'm not saying, go take, not that you want to do this, take four or five city buses today, if you want to. You probably don't want to. You'll find that four or five people, male, female, every color, are driving the damn thing. They're saying hello to people that get on. They're doing a good job. They're dealing with a couple of idiots per hour.
Yeah.
And guess what? They do a friggin' good job. Right?
Yeah.
I would agree.
And, you know, yeah, so
I think 99% of people.
Yet there's got to be, I'm sure if you went into a CTA garage, you'll find some mechanic that hasn't turned a wrench in 6 years. Right? And it sleeps half the... I mean, I know I can... By working for the city, I could show you where the people are snoozing, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but not everybody is. There's some people that actually give a crap about what they do. But to get back real quick to... I don't know if you guys had a class like that in Loyola in your MBA thing, Russell, but one of the classes at the University of Chicago, this one kind of... there was like one class out of 20 that you had to take that was like real-world stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you what, I learned more... Like whenever you go to meetings and something, you had to find a spot. Everybody had to find a group think of some kind, you know, a committee or whatever it was. And you had to go with your notebook before you had computers and stuff. And you had to list all the different people in such a way where you had a matrix. And everything somebody said or any discernible piece of body language, you had to write as a positive, negative, or neutral.
Okay.
And I picked the Board of Trustees of Evergreen Park because they were close enough. And they were right next to the saloon.
Yeah.
So I go right for the meeting over to have a beer at Bleeker's. But I went, and it just happened to be them picking who the next sanitation group was going to be. And there was a group there that had been doing the business in Evergreen Park, and everybody liked these guys. They did a great job. And somebody came in with a lower bid. And to say the body language was like, it was like you dropped a stink bomb. Like, wait a minute. You guys are actually... They spent two meetings, and you could just tell by the body language that they were going to try every way possible to give it to the guys that were there. And they weren't that much higher. They were like 3 or 5% higher. It wasn't a huge amount. And they ended up with lawyers saying that the best bid wasn't necessarily the cheapest. And they kept working and working. And finally, once they got the okay, that even though the other bid, although it was a little lower, that, you know, and they started going, well, these guys would bring an extra garbage can out on a Sunday if somebody needed it, and all the stuff that they had done where they didn't get paid that wasn't included in the contract, and how we knew the new guys were going to do the same thing or not just slam the phone down. I mean, it became an amazing education as you watch the nine people, you know, with a plus comment, and they talk about the new guys, it'd be a negative comment. Then you'd see one of the ladies sit there and like yawn. Well, that'd be negative. She didn't like what the guy was saying. We were talking good about the new play. And they ended up voting the old guys back in. And the old guys, and the weird part is the minute they got the vote, they didn't want to sit for the rest of the meeting. They were like congressmen on TV. They got up and walked out as soon as they got.
That's right. Don't talk past the sale.
Yeah.
When they say yes, get the hell out of there. They just got up and left.
But I'm saying it was one of the most fascinating things I ever did because you had to look at each and every person and decide if they had body language, if their tone of voice, whatever. You had to grade everything they did as being a positive, negative for whatever the guy talking or whatever they were saying. It was pretty fascinating, which was kind of what you were alluding to earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know why people, I don't think they do that anymore in college, but it was interesting. I had to go to like three meetings because it took that long for them to find a way.
Oh, my God. I mean, I was on a board of education. I got elected to the board of education out in Hinsdale, Clarendon Hills, and it was the biggest waste of 4 years of my life ever.
Really?
It was nothing but frustration and nothing but being criticized. And I would make decisions that weren't necessarily the best for my kid, but were best for the average kid across the board. And you know, nobody was happy. It really, if I could go back and change one thing in my life, it's having done that. In fact, the teacher, because I was one of the negotiators for the teacher contract, the teachers were so nasty to my kids, I ended up having to send them to private school.
Really?
Yep. Yep. Jesus. I mean, it was, yeah. And these were teachers that you couldn't fire. They had reached that point, whatever. I don't think they call it tenure or whatever. But yeah, it's, I got so much backlash from other parents and from teachers. I was like, what the heck did I sign up for here? And I came, the only reason I didn't resign early was the process to replace me was so arduous. It would have taken like, you know, 100 hours of each of the other people's times. And even though I hated a couple of them, I just didn't want to do that to them.
Yeah.
So I just showed up and I actually worked on writing a book and just totally zoned out for the last year of being on that board.
But some of the stuff is fixable. And a lot of, it's a lot of what Kevin and I banter back and forth on is Kevin's in a smaller community and he was able to, with a group of other people, throw out like three or four of the trustees to get a new group in there. And the fortunes of their area have changed dramatically for the better.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't think anybody has that power to do that in Chicago. That's why I sit there and watch it.
We can't do that in a big city like Chicago.
It's very difficult. But I know there was a guy, Audrey lived in, it wasn't Palos Park. That's the real rich place. She was in either Palos Heights or Palos Hills, one or the other. And they were renowned as having like one of the worst police forces in the state, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they hired this guy, a new police chief. They must have been getting so much, you know, basically crap from people. They hired this guy. And she says, yeah, within a year or two, they're all of a sudden like one of the best police forces in the state. I had heard about this. One morning I go to the White Hen, the dear departed White Hen. Mm-hmm. I pull in to get a couple of cups of coffee, and all of a sudden I see like the police chief pull in a squad car. And I had seen him, but I never talked to him. He piles out. The guy makes me look like a child. He's like 6'7". Not even heavy, and he had to be 3 1/4. It's a huge man.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's standing next to me. I look like a kid. And I go, officer, how are you? And I say, you're the chief. You're the new guy doing the, you know, nothing good, all this good stuff said about you. So you got to, you know, everybody talks to me. I go, how did you do it? And he says, well, real simple. There were a couple of guys who were bad apples. They're gone. And he says, you see me in a squad car? I go, yeah. And he says, you know, when I go out and drive around, and I take a different shift a day, and I drive around, and I'm actually a policeman for like a couple hours, it's amazing how all the other guys are working a lot harder because they know I'm able to drive by if they're sleeping somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he goes, it didn't take much. Plus, nobody would badmouth the guy. If he hit you, you'd fly across the street. You know, but I'm saying, but he was the nicest guy. And he goes, no, you just got to use some common sense. You got to be out there. You got to be where the people are. They got to know that you're with them. You're mm-hmm. behind them, and also, by the way, you're watching them because there's a fine line there. We had this long conversation. You know, it's just common sense. I mean, a lot of guys in the Army know that. I mean, you got to be able to, you know, tell people what to do. You got to be able to order them, but they also have to know that you take orders like you're supposed to. That you're pushing for everybody to get out of there alive. Where, you know, there's a confidence that you have to build. And oh, by the way, you got to not crack the whip, but you got to say, look, if you're not going to do it this way, you're out of here. And not be afraid to boot somebody. So, I mean, it's not like the formula is all that.
No. No, no, no. But you have to have the ability to boot someone.
Right.
And there's just not the ability.
If
this guy
would have booted you, you'd have stayed booted.
I've seen it at the university level.
Oh, yeah.
I've been in faculty meetings, and it's not just at Loyola. I have never been around so many people that would say that they're just not going to do something. Because they don't have to.
Well,
even if it's for the best of the students.
I really believe...
Yeah, it drove me absolutely bonkers, because that's not my mindset.
Well, I think that
to a fault, although I've reached the point now where I'm probably going to be one of those people that says no a lot more than I used to.
Well, you go all the way back to Kennedy, Russell, and mm-hmm. I think you know the history of this. I mean, not like you were around during a missile crisis, but even then, we almost all died because, was it Kennedy or Eisenhower said, get those friggin' missiles out of Turkey, and the Army never did it, right? And that was the alleged reason why the Russians were so bold to put missiles in Turkey, because
mm-hmm.
we had or in Cuba, because yeah. we had been. And Kennedy said, "Don't tell me we still have those things in Turkey." Whenever we told you idiots to get them out of there,
when are they still doing there?
Yeah, what are they still doing there? Why
nobody?
Is this on my plate when it shouldn't be? I mean, something else might have happened because they challenged him. He was a young guy and everything. But the fact is, I mean, Bush didn't deserve the idiots not fixing the dike, or they knew it was busted in New Orleans. And sure enough, a hurricane showed up just at the wrong time.
He just was the guy in charge when it happened.
Yeah, he didn't deserve that.
No.
I mean, Trump didn't deserve COVID.
That's what I always say about Lightfoot. As bad as she is, in my opinion, and in a lot of people's opinion, I mean, talk about the toughest 2 years in the history of the city.
Oh, yeah.
If you're mayor,
yeah.
You come in and a 100-year pandemic happens, and then the race riots happen, or whatever you want to call them. I mean, Jesus, like, talk about a tough 2 years.
But, Manny, that's part of, I mean, I don't think anybody deserves that. I mean, she certainly didn't, and these other guys didn't.
Well, how do you think, we'll go back to the second daily. How do you think he would have handled the riot part any differently?
Probably not. Maybe a little bit.
I don't even know how you handle it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's kind of where I'm going with
well,
that
one. Well, one thing, right. I think the police are pretty far behind the times in terms of, I knew people that had security guards, like security groups at their shopping centers, and they were able to access, Twitter and Facebook, and they knew where the rioters were coming.
Yeah.
And the police seemed like they were clueless.
Yeah.
You know, which is a problem.
You know, I have a fraternity brother down in Memphis that was on the Memphis police force, and he joined some of the Facebook groups to figure to try to help get ahead of it.
Yeah.
He got fired for it.
I'm sure they were all over him for that.
Yeah, no, he got fired for it.
Yeah.
For because he did make up a fake Facebook account to do that. But they basically fired him for spying on those folks.
But
try to do good on his own time.
But I think everybody, you know, you can't, how can I say this? I mean, you can't be in a situation where you can't have sex unless you had it before, right? Or none of us would be here. But you also can't, and I'm going to say old guy, young guy, but you can't keep electing people that have nothing in their background other than they happen to have a point of view you like, or they happen to be a color you like, or they happen to be a gender you like. You can't keep electing people with no history whatsoever of being able or ever having had to handle a serious problem and expect them all of a sudden to do it.
Right.
I mean, you don't expect me to walk into a ring with Mike Tyson and somehow win. I mean, it's not going to happen, right? You know, it doesn't mean that people can't, you know, rise to the occasion because nobody gets to learn to be president because you weren't president before somewhere else. But Obama had no experience. Bush had no experience. He was a governor and a baseball owner. And he was a playboy before he was 40.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these people, I mean, it's not the same. I mean why would anybody think Lori Lightfoot could handle a big problem? I mean, maybe she could. She'll grow into it. But the fact is, she never has. I mean, mm-hmm. She's there because she happened to be black and gay, and these were the ones who voted. Right? I mean, this is not, doesn't mean I don't like her or anything like that. It just means where's the history that says this person should be in that job? Pritzker, what did he ever do? He sat on a bunch of boards because he had money. Right? I mean,
yeah.
S&P futures up 9, NASDAQ futures up 44. You like it when people rise to the occasion, but it doesn't always happen. We'll be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.